What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week we are talking a movie that probably gave me the most nightmares of any film in my youth. We're going to be talking Zodiac on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I am one of your, this week, two co-hosts, Ethan Klein, here with me, Brad Miller, Mike Duranic, we can say suspension, vacation, life, whatever you want to go with, but he is not with us. Brad, it is just you and I. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ethan?
I'm doing all right. This movie does not have the same ill effects it had on me when I was younger. So I was able to watch it, get through it, and not well. Actually, you know what? I did watch it today. So if I have nightmares tonight, then we'll see if it still has the same effect. But this movie always just creeped the hell out of me, and it's not a horror movie. But also in some ways, it is very horrifying in a lot of ways. So. We'll get into all that. I'm starting to even get into the first question I ask, and we'll kick things off there, Brad, and I'll ask you, what was your first experience with Zodiac? Did you see it in theaters in 2007? Did you catch it later on TV? And then what did you bring into the rewatch for this week's episode?
Well, before I answer that, I will say, I've heard you say you watched as a young kid that probably any like 6, 7, 8 year old watching that you somehow were able to sneak in, that says something. This gave you the most nightmares as a kid. Zodiac. I would not have gone that way because, you know, I obviously saw it, but so it was not scary to me, but I could see how it would jack up a kid, especially when it was unsolved, you know. So that makes sense. When I was younger, the one that scared the crap out of me was this TV show Mysteries, because I was watching that show, every single person that wasn't caught, I swear, was standing outside my window.
Yep.
Watch the show. And they had that theme song music playing and that guy's voice, like, yeah, that show just crap out of me. I get where you're coming from, but a nice little trip down memory lane. So to answer your question, the first time I saw this was exactly about 24 hours ago. Was my first watch. Had not seen this before. I mentioned it in a previous podcast on our other podcast, Of Course I'm Right. We did scariest movie scenes, and I was familiar with the scene in the basement, and I mentioned that as one of them that just creeped me out. And I will say it did not fail again. You just feel that tension when he's in the basement with that guy, thinking like, okay, is this Zodiac? Like, is this guy gonna, like, you know, use Gyllenhaal's skin as a blanket or something? Yeah, that whole thing was intense. Did not let me down. But my first watch was, one day ago.
Nice, nice. My first watch was not in theaters. It was on DVD. I don't know if we got it from Redbox or if I just got it from, like, the movie store at the mall. So, I mean, it would have been probably around a year after its release. So I was sitting probably around 13 years old when I saw this. It was just as you were explaining with the unsolved mysteries things, right? What got to me was the reality of it. Those kind of movies have always stuck with me longer. Horror movies, you know, we did The Conjuring on this podcast. Love that movie. And that one, I mean, maybe I had some like creepy dreams, but I've always been able to just kind of power through those and move on. I don't want to dive into a deeper conversation about the reality of that stuff. And we've gone through some of that, but there's just something distant about the experience that those people are having versus who knows if your neighbor is a psychopath, right? Like, just the reality of the situation and the fact that it was unsolved always stuck with me. But that being said, it's a movie that I've come back to because I always really appreciated how good of a movie it was. It's very long. It feels like the full 240, but just the how interesting it is watching just this cartoonist try to solve this crime alongside the police and all those things. I always just really enjoyed the story. We can dive into that. The people who we see on screen, some people we've talked about before and some pretty big names that we haven't. Jake Gyllenhaal is the central lead of this film. We talked about him with Prisoners before. Everyone, if you listen to the show, you know how big of a fan I am of Jake Gyllenhaal, through and through. Brad, I'm curious, since this is your first time experiencing this, just what did you think of what he brought to the table? I think most people, when they think of Jake Gyllenhaal, they do think of some of the over the top things that he brings to a role. Like he brings a lot of intensity to a lot of his dramatic roles, physically, like some brooding stuff, things like that. This is much more subdued, but still leading in a different way. So, what was your take on this kind of different spin from Jake Gyllenhaal?
I think he did well. He did not win the movie for me. There was someone else that that won the movie, but I mean, I think it was a great performance. Actually, there were several great performances. This thing was star-studded. I had no idea. Every time you turn around, it's like, oh, and they're in it, and they're in it, and they're in it. So I was not expecting that. But yeah, great performance. Not a whole lot I can say. You're more of the Gyllenhaal expert, but I mean, this was a solid A for him. He did exactly what you needed to do, to kind of like, I don't know, keep that Boy Scout persona he had, a little bit paranoid, a little bit like, I forget what Robert Downey Jr. said, like touched, I think is how he described it. Is he okay? Is he touched? Like he just kind of had that, like he walked that fine line of like, okay, there's probably something mentally a little bit off with him because he's a little bit too into this. But then, as he kind of develops that character, like you kind of appreciate it more. Like he's wanting to solve the puzzles. He's wanting to figure it out. He's wanting to do the right thing and get this guy caught, kind of do his civil duty. So, yeah, great performance. And I was thoroughly entertained, even though this is a plug to not use, I think it's called Pluto, a
Yeah.
movie
Oh, dear
app.
God.
Like,
It was horrendous. I was in the same
yeah,
boat.
don't use Pluto. It was awful. There was about 27 commercials, and a couple different times it would buffer, and but when it buffered, it would skip like 3 minutes ahead, and I had to
Yes.
go back and rewind. Like, just ridiculous. Next time, I'm gonna pay the $3 or $4 and rent it. But that's gonna get on a bigger discussion. Let's put a pin in this because I want to come back to this discussion about how to watch movies. But
Okay.
obviously, we can put that in a better spot somewhere in our discussion with this because, like, yeah, Pluto was very, very frustrating.
I was ready to send my TV through a wall when I went through the Pluto experience, which was also terrible for me. And then I came in. I finished this about an hour ago. I started it yesterday, finished it, came in. I was doing some unpacking. I just moved and I was unpacking some DVDs. And the first one I grabbed out of the box was my copy of Zodiac. So could have skipped the whole hellacious process of Pluto if I had just unpacked that box at a different time. But yeah, I mean, you did say, like, I am a huge Jake Gyllenhaal fan. I've seen most of the work he's done. And I think what I do appreciate in this is some of what made him a star in Donnie Darko. I hate the movie Donnie Darko. I do, I'll admit it. But I think what brought him to the forefront in that is his ability to just fall into whatever character he is. and a guy like Gyllenhaal, who is a movie star, who is incredibly good looking, sometimes those guys can't play the nerd, right? Or the lonely, because it just something just doesn't click. You don't buy it. And he does just, you believe that he is this guy who's kind of been on his own his whole life. He's a single dad, doesn't have many friends. He's okay with that. And then, especially the relationship he ends up building with the woman he marries later on in the movie. I love that relationship because I loved how she was interested in it too. And you almost just saw this glimmer of like, oh my God, like I found someone who's willing to do this with me. Like, I really enjoyed that they put those little things in there to give you some more investment in the character. I'm curious, as we just kind of go through the other people in this movie, you said someone else won the movie for you. Who was that? And let's just have a conversation about them.
For me, this one was Mark Ruffalo. I think he killed it. He's able to, similar to Spotlight, he just can carry this like soft undertone. But while he's being, a little bit subdued in how he carries himself and how he projects his voice and how all of this stuff, like you can feel the intensity in which he does his job. And it was the same thing in Spotlight, very similar role. I enjoyed this one more because, there's times when it's just like you almost have to lean into the TV to hear him because he's like soft spoken and he's controlled. And he had to be that to be the guy chasing the Zodiac. Like, if you're Denzel Washington in Inside Man chasing Zodiac, I feel like 100 more people would have been killed because he would have pissed this guy off. Like he had to kind of just walk this fine line of controlled, because he didn't want society in the state of California to become panicked. And he was responsible for catching this guy that I guess may or may not have been responsible for several deaths in California. It was a little bit, what's the word? I guess hard to tell, what he was copycatting or what he was taking credit for or what he was actually doing. But I think that Ruffalo just killed it. I mean, really, Robert Downey Jr. was awesome. Anthony Edwards was great. John Carroll Lynch played that part really well.
Oh, he's horrifying.
Dermot Mulroney, just great in his role. I don't know how to pronounce the other guy's name. The guy that played Narlo, Logue. I don't, is it
Oh, Donnell Logue.
Donnell Logue? Yeah, just they all nailed it. The guy that played Mullinex,
That Elias Kotos? That was character.
just character after character. Like I don't know, they spared no expense in bringing in the stars for this one for sure, which was really really interesting. And I hadn't seen that Chloe actress in a long time, and she made an appearance in this one, and she's been in a couple other things that I've seen. So yeah, just star-studded. But for me, it was really the three that really stood out were Gyllenhaal, Ruffalo, and Robert Downey Jr. I think those three just nailed their parts, and did exactly what they needed to do.
Just to touch on what you said, it is hard to confirm one way or the other. The official report is that they have tallied five deaths to the Zodiac Killer, two people that were injured and su survived, and there is anywhere from 20 to 30 that it's a coin toss. Did he do it? Did he not? So that's how insane this whole thing really is. The fact, I mean, there's potentially 30 bodies out there that are unsolved crimes, either attached to this or to any random person. And I do agree with you, the three that really stand, head and shoulders above. Mark Ruffalo, this is probably the third or fourth time we've talked about him on this podcast. Did you ever go back and watch Collateral? I know you weren't with us on that podcast.
Yeah, I saw him on that one.
And I think just the more we talk about him, and over the last couple of years, I've gained such an appreciation for him because when he is in something, I love it. And up until a couple of years ago, it was, yeah, Mark Ruffalo is fine. But now every time I see him in something, I really do get excited. He's just in the newest Ryan Reynolds movie that they put out on Netflix a couple of weekends ago, that I did review on my TikTok page. And I loved it. As soon as he came on screen, I was like, it's Mark Ruffalo, and I'm in a better mood. He's a fantastic actor. He is in this. Robert Downey Jr. is probably who I would pick as the MVP of this one. And it's just so interesting to see. I think this is the last movie he made before he was Iron Man. So it's crazy that there was a time in his career, right, to even think that he was an Iron Man because of what he's done the last decade plus. But this was right before it. He's now moved on from that, and he's still someone for me. When he pops up in something, I want it to be so amazing now that he has moved on from Iron Man. I know you and I really appreciate The Judge, but it did not succeed the way they wanted it to. He's now, and Dr. Doolittle was a mess, but his next few projects, he's going back into Sherlock Holmes. He's going to be in the next Christopher Nolan movie. He just signed on to do like a series of detective movies with Amazon. So he's just someone, when he's on screen, I love him because of how much I love Iron Man. He's super talented, and I just want to see him continue to succeed. And even if he never does again, we have things like this that we can go to outside of the superhero realm that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I think that I was just thinking that, both of them being in the Avengers, like, I'm glad that Downey Jr. did it. I think it was perfect for what he needed in his career. And I think that it's easy to see him in other roles and, still kind of jump back and forth between him and Iron Man. I don't like that Ruffalo is in the Avengers. I don't like that Ruffalo is Bruce Banner in the Hulk. I wish that his career had just been knocking out great movie after great movie like this. The years that he spent doing the Hulk, I think we're missing out on some movies that could have been made in those years, and I wish we could kind of go back and have a redo on that casting. I will say that now that he's in it, like, he brings a layer to Bruce Banner that I don't with some other people, like the way he can connect with Scarlett Johansson on on some of those scenes that they do. Like, I think he nails it, but I really wish that over the last few years of him being the Hulk, we could have gotten some more performances like this, because I think he elevates movies like this to the next level. And I wish that Hollywood, was putting out more stuff like this, like they used to, versus just the mega superhero movies all the time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I do really enjoy him in the role, as well. And I hate to tell you, he's not going anywhere, Brad. You're gonna have to share Mark Ruffalo, with the MCU. He's still signed on. He's about to be. They're doing a She-Hulk show, and he's gonna be one of the stars of that. And
Oh boy.
He'll still be popping up, in plenty of things. But also, to the other side of it, he has three things in production right now, two dramatic films and a TV miniseries that he's a part of. So, he's still getting all the work in that you want to see as well. We can flip behind the camera now. David Fincher, who we talked about way back when we did Fight Club, and this guy, entire body of work, he's right there as one of my favorite directors. The more I think about it, I mean, to me, it's just home run after home run. He did like a lot of guys did in that era. He was a music video director. He got Alien 3, which has been critically panned, and I've never even seen it, because I'm just not a huge fan of that franchise. But how do you bounce back from something like that? You put out Seven, and then you do The Game, and then Fight Club, Panic Room, Zodiac. Benjamin Button, not a huge fan of, but Social Network, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl. I mean, this guy, he is a home run hitter, and I've just been a massive fan ever since I first stumbled upon Fight Club or Seven was the first movie of his that I saw, and I've just gone from there.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I think I'm a fan of several of his films. I really hope we can get into some of his other work on this podcast, simply because it gives me an excuse to go back and rewatch some of those movies. But yeah, Social Network's fantastic. I like Gone Girl. Zodiac was very, very good. I know we haven't really gotten into that yet, but Seven was. Yeah, like this guy, he knows his stuff. Obviously, people know where we stand on Fight Club because we talked about that. I'm right there with you. I've never taken the time to rank directors or producers or anything, so I don't know where he stands. But definitely, I could say I'm a fan of his work.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, yeah, and I don't. I know that I have a list of 25 movies that are my top 10 favorite. I don't have a list of directors, but there are just guys that, oh, this guy's making a new movie. Cool, I'm there. And he's certainly one of them. Like him, our old pal, Denis Villeneuve, Christopher Nolan, those guys, they're all in that group of like, cool. You have a new movie. Don't even need to tell me anything about it. I'll be right there opening weekend. And Seven, I'm shocked. I mean, it's a September film. I don't know if we did a lot of like dark, depressing movies last September, but I can tell you right now, I don't really see a way that we go through two Septembers on this podcast and don't get to that. So.
Well, I can tell you looking why we probably didn't. September, there were five films that we picked before Seven. We did Warrior, we did 310 to Yuma, we did Moneyball, Prisoners, and The Town. And so, three of those were big heavy hitters for us. And then obviously 310 to Yuma and Prisoners. I'm not sure why we picked those over Seven, but I'm sure we had good reason at the time. So, but yeah, all five of those were great choices. So September is just one of those months. We should have, what we really should have done is gone back and just scratched Red Eye, in August and just put the Seven at the end of August. That would have made that month so much better.
I will tell not to go too deep down the rabbit hole, but the new Batman movie came out, and the first review I heard of the movie was that they felt that the director turned Seven into a Batman movie. And for me, I was like, cool, I'm in. I'm not listening to another review. After seeing the Batman, that was the best review someone could have given me, and it is up there. Like, it's not too far step, too many steps behind The Dark Knight for me. Like, if that's what you're into, if you like that kind of thing, if the idea of Batman living in the world of Seven sounds nifty to you, like, it was a home run. So, just to go full circle on our little
So
Seven
what you're
franchise.
really saying is it's good that I probably didn't take my son to see it a couple days ago.
Absolutely not. It got an R rating over in the UK, and had it been rated R here in the US, it would not have surprised me with nothing being changed. It is dark. It is violent, not bloody because it did keep the PG-13, but it is not your family-friendly Batman.
Well, I guess dad for the win there.
Yeah, good work,
Because for
Dad.
some reason I chose not to take him because I didn't read any reviews. I just assumed, oh, it's a Batman movie. He'll be into it. So we probably would have been walking out of that one, is my guess.
There was a family that walked out in my screening that probably same thing like you. And it took about 10 minutes, and the mom was like, okay, this is not cool. I loved it, and I think you would really enjoy it too if you've got 3 hours to kill. Let's roll it back into Zodiac. We've gotten way off track, which is fine. And so just so, I guess just kind of our overall thought. Well, actually, why break something or fix something if it's not broke? Let's play Rotten Tomatoes, Brad. You versus me. You haven't had it ruined for you, have you?
I have not.
Okay, and I have not either because we watched it on Pluto, not Peacock. I believe based on I was the most recent one of the two of us to win. So I'll guess, and then while you come up with your guess, I'll try to pull up the score. I'm assuming that this thing had to be pretty highly or pretty well reviewed. I don't know if it got it did not get nominated for a single Academy Award, which is pretty shocking. But I still think it probably had to get pretty well reviewed. I'm just going to play a safe bet and I'm going to throw an 85 on it.
Wow, that's pretty close to where I would have gone had I started it. In my head, I was kind of thinking 87, 88. So, I am going to go that way, but obviously for gamesmanship, I will pick 86. And I guess just hope that people weren't finding some nits to pick there. So, did that give you enough time to find the correct score?
It did, and people did have nits to pick with it. The audience threw a 77 on this bad boy, but critics did not agree with that. It is at an 89, and critics is what we judge this
Winner,
movie on. So
winner.
you do take the victory there, Brad. That's a for a dramatic movie, that is a pretty decent gap. I'm not overly surprised. I think if again, so hard to judge movies against each other, but I think for what this movie is, like I would have it right around that 9 out of 10 range. But I can understand how a quarter of the people that see this movie say thanks but no thanks, whether it be for the runtime or just the fact that they don't want to watch the Zodiac kill people for 3 hours. I can see kind of where the gap happens.
I guess I don't get that because if you're going to sit down, you see how long it is before you sit down to watch it, and you know what it is you're going to watch. So to leave that and say, well, I don't want to see someone kill people, like, what do you expect when you're watching a movie about a killer? Like, it is what it is. If you don't like the content, then don't choose to watch it, but yeah, hey, whatever. People are entitled to their own opinion.
That's a great point. Would you be in line? And again, it's not, they're not saying it's a 9 out of 10 when it's rated 90%, but I overall then as we now we can transition into that, is this upper half of the list for you? Is this a 9 in that 9 out of 10 range? Is this going to end up in the middle? Where are you at in terms of the almost 60 movies we've reviewed here on the threequel?
Well, it's not almost 60. This is number 60.
Oh.
So we have hit that marker. I have personally ranked 59 of them because I have not watched Miracle yet. I've seen Miracle, but I have not rewatched it since I did that one. So I have ranked 59. I will rank number 60 here soon. Actually, I've been known to be wrong on this before. So let me go back and just make sure I numbered these correctly before I go too hard in the paint, because Mike's not here to correct me, because normally he'd be like, well, actually, Brad, we've done
I think this should be 60. I do believe you're correct because this will
yep,
be
I just
episode.
went back and I looked at my numbers. This is number 60. So to be in the top 30, it is in the top 30. It actually comes in my top 20. It
Okay.
comes in at number 19, just between The Hangover and Sicario. And I would say right now, I really, really liked the top 27 movies. Those are all kind of my, like,
Okay.
probably my, 8.8 and higher.
You've almost got, I mean, top half, bottom half, it almost is in your kind of your line of these are pretty great movies and meh or
No,
less.
not meh. Like, I 1 through 27 right now, I would say are, yeah, those are the A's. And then 28 starts with Spotlight, and probably through 46. Well, no, I'll say 45 are the ones that I was still a fan of, and that's where I have Primal Fear. And then 46 down, I could probably be okay with never seeing the film again, and that's starting with Crazy Stupid Love and working down. So, and Red Eye is definitely in that bottom 15 there.
Well,
So that's where I fall. 46 through 59 right now for me are ones that it's like, yep, I'm good. I'm glad we reviewed it and rewatched it, but I probably don't need to see it again. So, and I had a couple in there that really surprised me. Gladiators in that category. White Men Can't Jump is in that category. Silence of the Lambs is down there. Something About Mary. Captain America Winter Soldier. Those are all in that bottom quarter for me. And like, as I'm rewatching these and gaining an appreciation for how to kind of review a film and pick apart different things, like different movies have been much higher than I expected. I talked about Interstellar last week and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Get Out, this movie, Sicario, Gran Torino, like those are ones that, like, as you start to really evaluate, have climbed that list for me. And then other movies that, before we started this podcast, I would have said I really loved. I guess I just don't, they don't fall in that category anymore. So that's been kind of neat to see that process.
yeah, I think this one, I mean, will definitely end up in that top 20 for me as well. It's just, and it's weird because it's horrifying, and the scenes where you see the Zodiac killings are, still to this day. You talked about that the basement scene didn't disappoint, and it didn't. I completely agree with you. The one that has always stood out to me, where I still get a pit in my stomach, is him picking up the mom on the side of the road. The way they shoot that, even though I know what's going to happen, I'm convinced that he's going to like kill that baby. And it is because of the music, the setting, the lighting. I love how they film him, right? And I don't know, I can tell you for a fact that John Carroll Lynch played him at least once. I don't know if he played him every time or if they used different actors to try to, allude to the fact that it is technically unsolved.
They did. They credited it to, like, this is Zodiac 1, Zodiac 2, Zodiac 3, Zodiac 4.
Okay.
So
Because
yeah, they did definitely use different
I
ones.
tell you, for the one that I know this time watching it is the Lakeside killing. That was John Carroll Lynch. That was his voice. I have no doubt about it. But the other ones, and you said it there, they credited it to multiple people. And I love that too. I love that it adds the mystery to us, and almost the point of the movie comes down, not, it doesn't come down to answering the question. It comes down to showing the horror of this time. Because you didn't know. Nobody knew, and nobody knew how to know. And so it just puts you right in the seat of what those people were living in the late 60s and early 70s with this guy just roaming around, because you never felt safe, and you never did in the entire movie. And I loved that.
Yeah, it was definitely well done for sure.
All right, let's throw it through then to favorite line, favorite scene. We've mentioned a lot of scenes, so I guess, Brad, we can start there. I'll ask you, what is your favorite scene from Zodiac?
I really think I have to go back to the basement scene just because, like, it's just creepy. It really kind of brings into mind different movies. You kind of get a Silence of the Lambs vibe there. Like, what's this guy going to do to him in this basement? And I remember, like, yelling at the TV, like, why are you going downstairs? Don't be an idiot. Like, there's no reason that you have to go down there other than, he's just really curious and wants to see what this guy's going to show him. So I think that even though there's some better acted scenes and some nice action scenes in this movie, I think that I got to go with that one just because it's kind of iconic for just how creepy it is.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta agree with you. That's the best scene of the movie. I mean, that old guy, like, and how quickly it goes from like you're I mean, the movie does convince you that it's John Carroll Lynch, and then just how creepy they do that, you're like, is it this old guy? Because it's horrifying, the way they put that together. I mean, my secondary shout out would just be any scene that Robert Downey Jr. and Jake Gyllenhaal have together. I think their chemistry is really good in this, and I think just the nature of like how Robert Downey Jr.'s character has clearly done things for a long time versus how Robert Graysmith is currently doing it, I think is really well done for me. So that would probably be just my extra shout out. I love seeing those two on screen together. Favorite line, Brad, from Zodiac.
I think I have to go with the first time that Gyllenhaal and Ruffalo meet, and they're talking, and Mark Ruffalo saying to him like, "I can't get your help. I can't, give you advice. I can't talk about an open case, and I certainly can't tell you to go speak to Ken Narlow at, in Napa,"
Right.
and like, and then he even spells it for him, and like, it cracks me up. It's this awesome moment where you're like, okay, this guy is willing to pull out all the stops now to help find this guy, and he sees something in Gyllenhaal that he believes in because he's not going to risk his career or his reputation on this guy unless he really believes in him. And I think that line in that little kind of like passing of the baton of like, hey, I've kind of hit a wall with this. It's been a couple years. Like, take this and run with it. And that was just, it was really cool to see. That was my favorite line.
That is a good one. I think for me, is I think it's probably Gyllenhaal's best acted moment. And it's just when, he's getting asked like, why is he doing this? Why is he devoting so much time? And he just says, I need to know who he is. I need to stand there. I need to look him in the eye, and I need to know that it's him. And just like it does become wildly obsessive. He puts himself in danger. Absolutely. Could potentially even put his family in danger because he gets the calls, with the breathing. So that to me, or that comes across as a threat to his family and his loved ones. But what it comes down to is just like, he's a cartoonist, never accomplished a ton, but he just feels this need to accomplish this one thing. And he feels like he has the ability to, that he can solve this puzzle, this riddle. And make this difference that he could figure out who this guy is, and help stop this terror. I mean, I think about how crazy it was to live at that time. We didn't mention it, but when he threatens to kill the kids coming off the bus, right? And the moral dilemma of do we put this in the paper? Do we not? Does it just egg this on? Will it create panic? And then, they don't, and he knows about it, so he pulls his kid off the bus. Like, that would be horrifying. And then as he's pulling his kid off the bus, like you'd feel an obligation to say something to the other parents, but
Oh, yeah,
you
for
were told
sure.
like, so it just, I mean, that would just, I would move. There's no way I'd be able to live in that city at that point. Like if I'm thinking that kids are going to get shot coming off a school bus, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I can't imagine the stress that it brought into these people's lives every single day, especially these people that knew more than the public did because they were getting these letters, even down to Paul Avery getting a freaking bloody t-shirt. And I just keep going back to like this movie just does such a good job of helping us live that horror, And that line just really seals it for me of like, I cannot rest until I know that I know this. And I think that's really just the whole point of the movie. And they don't tell us who, right? They give us an idea, but it's still never been closed. So that was a interesting rewatch for sure. Brad, I did not know that you hadn't seen it. I do always enjoy when we get to come back around to introducing either one or both of you to something new. So that was fun for me. Hopefully you've seen this if you listen to the podcast. And if you haven't, you still listen. Thanks anyway. Go back and rewatch it if you get the chance. Next week, we'll be shifting gears back into a somewhat lighter tone with Lethal Weapon, one of the great buddy cop action movies of all time. And we will be back full crew next week with Mr. Mike Duranik by our side. But this week, it was Zodiac. It was just me and Brad. And other than that, guys, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.